So plenty to discuss today if we wanted to. Yes, John.
Oh, no, I was just distracting you at the free throw line. Sorry.
John, for those of you listening on the air, on radio, John is waving his arms like the Toronto Raptor last night. Didn't help last night, and it didn't help much tonight. Although I concede you did distract me.
Yes, I did.
That's what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about the Raptor and how upsetting he was to...
Terrible.
To the Phoenix Suns.
Raptor gate.
Yeah, we're going to talk basketball today for the most part. And we'll get to other stuff later in the week. Scott Stinson of the National Post, the voice of the Raptors, Matt Devlin, coming up after these messages. We are back, McCowan, Shannon, as per usual. Joining us today, a little basketball talk, Scott Stinson of the National Post and the voice of the Toronto Raptors on television, Matt Devlin. All right, a lot of places we can go here. Some good, some not so good. But let's get to the, I'm sitting watching the game last night and near the end of it, Devin Booker's got free throws, makes the first one, but then snaps. Big smile comes over his face. He starts complaining to the officials. There is nobody in the arena other than friends and family.
Not even those.
Not many of those. And I'm not 100% sure of exactly what happened. So Matty D, give us the play-by-play of what went on.
Well, what transpired, the loneliest mascot in all of the NBA, the Raptor, the Hall of Fame mascot, was entertaining to Devin Booker's dislike, right? He was over there waving his arms, and so obviously Devin Booker brought it to the attention of one of the officials, and they asked said Raptor to move to the side. So he went into a vom, and it was unfortunate. However, based upon what we know now, they've patched it up. They were able to meet afterwards, and everything's going to be okay. Right. But you think about that moment for Devin Booker, and you envision there being thousands of fans there and fans jumping up and down, waving towels, doing
exactly.
All But here's the thing that I thought about. Maybe, right, from just a, not only a visual, but from a concentration standpoint, he's playing in front of essentially no one, right?
Right.
The last thing you would expect is a red dinosaur to pop up out of nowhere and start waving his arms and, you know, jumping up and down. So maybe that was more of a distraction. Actually having no one there and a red dinosaur is probably more distracting than having thousands of people there because you are focused in on that, right?
I'll give you that, but where in the rule book
it doesn't,
or the code of the National Basketball Association the Raptor cannot jump up and down? And I mean, he doesn't talk, right?
No, he doesn't talk. He's lonely too. And that's the thing, right? I mean, he's used to
entertaining. I'm lonely too, but I'm not distracting Devin Booker.
Raptor has come over to our broadcast table at least a half a dozen times a night just to drop in and give you a pat on the side. And so I turn around and in a commercial break, I'll watch him entertain. And, you know, he entertains for Jack and myself. And, we clap and applaud and tell him how much we love him.
Doug Smith, actually in the Star today, writes a great story about the loneliest mascot in the NBA. So, and let's face it, when that place is full, he is by far one of the most entertaining mascots, not just in the NBA, but in all of sports. He's done a marvelous job since he took the job in 1995.
He has. He's been tremendous.
As far as the game was concerned, at the end of the day, there's lots of things we can say, and we probably will say them. But Scott, this game was ultimately determined by free throw shooting. And there are many games that are determined by free throw shooting. Like you can hit 19 of 23 free throws and lose by 1 point and say, well, if they'd hit the other two more free throws.
Yeah.
But this was, I think, I don't know about you two guys, this might have been the worst free throw shooting game by an entire team that I think I've ever seen.
Yeah, I mean, they missed a lot for sure, and also a bunch of three-pointers that they normally are better, as particularly the guys who are good at shooting them missed more than their share, which I think is why the post-game reaction last night, despite the loss to Phoenix, it was all quite positive, you know, a real sense from the players that they had gone toe-to-toe with the best team in the NBA right now, and had, as you say, basically they make a couple of free throws, they win the game. So I think that's one of those weird things where it's annoying as somebody who, if you're wanting the Raptors to win, it's annoying because you say, well, all they have to do is make a few more from the line and they win the game. And yet at the same time, you say, well, we've sort of wondered through this little resurgence that they've had when they've been playing a lot of teams missing players and weaker teams in the league, what is it going to look like against a really good team? Well, here was a game against a really good team where they played pretty well. And I think in a way, it almost says more about the progress that the team is making than the games that they actually have won recently.
Well, I agree.
So Matt, do you think this is a better litmus test than, say, the victory against New Orleans?
Oh, for sure. You know, Phoenix is a team that outside of Cam Johnson came here somewhat healthy. I mean, there were some injuries, health and safety protocols, but you have your three key players, right? And Ayton, who they did a really good job on. And then also Devin Booker, they did a really good job. And Chris Paul, you know, Chris Paul's Chris Paul. You know, he's going into the Hall of Fame. And so, you know, to the point of, is it the worst, you know, free throw shoot? I've seen a lot of games and there are nights where they're just not going in. It's unfortunate for OG Anunoby. It's been interesting, actually, when you analyze Pascal Siakam, because he was coming off of a 10-for-10 game, but yet he's kind of had, you know, a little bit of a roller coaster ride at the free throw line, which, you know, is something that, you know, he's, you know, at 73 to 75, 76% free throw shooter. So you're hoping that based upon what he recently did at the line, that was, you know, going to kind of change, and it didn't. But, you know, he was, again, really good. Fred was really good. OG, really good. They didn't have Gary Trent Jr., I think, and rookie Scotty Barnes. But Gary Trent Jr., there are times when you need a shot, you need a bucket.
That's right.
He's that sort of player that when you go 4.5 minutes, as they did in what was a great defensive battle, right? I mean, it was a great defensive battle. I mean, the Raptors had won 6 in a row, allowing better than 100. Now a lot of that is today's NBA. But the Raptors last night defensively, that was one of their best defensive, if not the best defensive showing, you know, this season. And every now and again, as we know, because last night had that play, hard to believe, nobody in the building except for the Raptor had a playoff type intensity and feel to it. And when you go back and think about, okay, hey, here are the positives from it, I think there's a lot more positives. But to what I was saying about Gary Trent Jr., when you get down and guard, when you need a bucket, when the other team, you know, Phoenix did a really good job on Fred. Fred was able to get some shots late, as we know. But every now and again, you just need somebody to go get their shot. And Gary's one of those players.
Couldn't agree more with your analysis of it. I mean, defensively, it was their best game of the year.
Yeah.
And in the end of it, I mean, what was the free throw shooting? Did they get 50%? They were either right on 50 or maybe even one below 50.
Yeah, I was thinking like at one point they were 10 of 19, but I didn't look at the box score this morning. So, but it wasn't, you know, certainly something that they were typically used to shooting. And I did mention last night that you would hate for that to be the thing that you come back and look at, but it ended up being that sort of game. But also credit defensively, late fourth quarter, Phoenix. Yeah. As much as we talk about how good they were are offensively, defensively, they're really good. And the Raptors, when you look at their overall numbers defensively, they they aren't where they have been in the past. A lot of that is because of the personnel, who's in, who's out, injuries, health and safety protocols. But as Scott knows, you know, this is a team that with Nick Nurse, you know, they want to be that defensive type of team that we saw last night.
Yeah, one of the things that we've talked about in the last five or six games, how healthy they've been. Now, no Trent and no Barnes. But, Scotty, where do you think this team ends up? What do you think this team ends up doing if they can stay, quote unquote, this healthy?
I kind of thought coming into the year that aiming to be just above the play-in positions in the East was a reasonable goal for a team. Obviously, coming off the Tampa-related disaster of last year, it was a lot of extra wins to add to the win total in order to get up to fifth or sixth, somewhere like that. But I think that's a realistic goal now. I mean, I think they had the Pascal Siakam injury at the start of the season, so it took a while for him to come back and then to sort of find his footing, and he's played really well the last little while. So I think they're kind of rounding into form. They're finally got their, what you think of as their four key pieces on the floor together, Fred and OG and Pascal and Scotty Barnes, although he was away last night. And I think if they get those guys playing together for long stretches, they have every chance of sort of continuing this good run of form and finishing fifth or sixth somewhere in that mix. I think Chicago has obviously been awesome so far this year. Brooklyn is Brooklyn. Milwaukee is Milwaukee. Philadelphia is still pretty good, especially if they ever resolve the Ben Simmons situation. So I think Miami's, of course, very good too. I think it's unlikely that they get into that grouping, but just below that, I think is a reasonable expectation for where this team goes, even if they don't really do much in terms of the trade deadline or changing the mix of players they have now.
Well, and we have to acknowledge that there may be a change. Masai is not reluctant to pull the trigger. Depends on who ultimately is available. And there's a couple of guys at Indiana. And I guess we've discussed this a bit with Matt, but I'll throw it to both of you. Scott first. If you're Masai, if you're Bobby, are you looking for a big? Are you looking for, you know, the traditional back to the basket center? Or have you found an alternative with this group and you don't really want to mess that up by changing the way the game is played?
Yeah, I think the latter scenario, in that they do have a combination of players. I mean, you talk to people around the league and everyone kind of has their eyebrow raised looking at this Raptors lineup going, geez, they're actually going to do this when they're going to have four guys who are 6'8", 6'9", plus Fred on the floor for long stretches. They're going to have no traditional center. And it does seem to be working for them at times. I think you have some reasonable questions about whether that would work in a playoff series, especially if you're matched up against, you know, a Giannis or a Joel Embiid or somebody like that. But I think the thing is, Bob, that in order to go, well, you're going to go ahead and get a traditional big man, what is the cost of that? And is the traditional big man that you might get good enough to justify, you know, blowing up this experiment that they have going with more of a positionless basketball and a bunch of long rangey guys who can play defense and switch all over the place? So I think that's more the question. You probably can't get a game changing big man for anything that they're willing to pay, and bringing in somebody who's like a quality big, but not necessarily a game changing big, then that causes them to have to rethink everything that they've been doing so far this year. And obviously Nick Nurse is quite capable of retooling things and would probably relish the opportunity to throw everything out and start over again midseason. But I don't imagine that's the way they're leaning.
Matty, where do you sit on this?
Well, a couple of different things. You know, one, you know, before you're hoping that if you're Masai and Bobby, that you have a stretch of games, 38 games now into the season going into yesterday. If I said this to all three of you, you would kind of go, really? The Raptors had the 12th best record in the NBA going into last night's game. Think about that. The Eastern Conference is deep, and it's not just top-ended like the Western Conference. It's deep. Now, OG Anunoby, can they be healthy? OG Anunoby last night has played 8 games since the hit pointer November 15th. They're 7-1. Precious Achiuwa with the shoulder soreness, health and safety protocols. They had won like 9 games in a row that he and Ken Burch were both available, right? So now you get into, can they be healthy here for a stretch? There's only been 1 game this season that they've had their top 8. So now we start thinking about, what do you want? I know there's been a lot of conversation about point guard. I think they're okay without that. Because if you look at somebody like Pascal Siakam, it's been 7 games now, I think, in a row that he has led the team. He has 5 or more assists. He has the most assists during those 7 games total. You have Scotty Barnes, who's a distributor as well. OG, as we know, will bring the ball up, right? They like to play Fred off the ball. So I think there's some of that. And we have seen so much success of Pascal getting a rebound and initiating the offense. And that was even during the 2019 playoffs. So now you look in and you say, you know, is it another wing scorer? Is it a big? And then what do you give up? And I don't know if it's a wing scorer because, you know, I look at last night, you don't have Gary Trent Jr. We talked about that already. He can get his shot going. Yeah. Barnes is really good, just, you know, distributing and in his mid-range, you know, shot, his percentage is really high. So, no, okay, let's look at a big. Is there a traditional big left in the game? We saw Jonas Valanciunas, even Jonas. And I used to laugh about, you know, everybody would look at me like, really? Like, you know, I'd say death taxes and JV's threes. But you know, when you talk to, you know, the coaches at the time behind the scene, that's what they wanted. They wanted spacing. They wanted him continuing to work on his three-point shooting. 43% three-point shooter right now. Has a little bit of back to the basket. But ultimately, can you guard in space? That's the big thing, right? Rim runner, and can you guard in space? And every now and again, stretch the floor. So that gets me back to what I would call a new age big, okay? And who are those new age bigs? And Cleveland has a couple of them, right? Jared Allen and Evan Mobley right now. Neither of whom you're going to get. The New York Knicks have one that's been up and down, and that's a Mitchell Robinson type, right? And, you know, but he's not at the level of those other two, right? So,
for sure.
You know, you look around, and I think that if you could add somebody like that, because it goes back to what Scott talked about, which is, you know, their switchability, what they like to do defensively. Can you get a rim runner? Are you adding length? You know, do you have somebody like that? I think that would be intriguing to add to this mix, right? But we'll see kind of how, you know, it develops.
Can I throw something in?
You don't need that traditional back to the basket big. It's even when you look at the Phoenix, Bobcat, but even when you look at Phoenix with Ayton, and they've done a tremendous job in his development. I still think about, man, you know, imagine Luka Doncic with that group, right? Yeah. You know, so, you know, it's hard when you start getting into that conversation about bigs.
Well, let me throw something right out of left field that none of us have ever talked about. What about bringing back Valanciunas? Would you even think about that? This is a guy who wouldn't cost you a lot, I wouldn't think, in terms of trade. He's with a team that presumably is going nowhere. If and when Williamson comes back, maybe, but that's, you know, that's not on the horizon, I don't think. Is there enough in his game? Because we did see some things last night, or the other night against New Orleans,
right?
In that game, that it kind of, I went, geez, you know, he's still a pretty decent player, and you know they made the move, and it turned out to be a great move with him at the time. He's a veteran guy. You don't need to give him a lot of minutes. You don't need to expect to get a lot of minutes from him, but can he be sorry, John?
He loves it here.
He does.
Loves it here. I don't doubt for a second he'd be thrilled to come back. Is that even worth talking about? Scotty, you're humming and hawing. I saw you roll your eyes.
No. I actually don't think it's a completely out of left field idea at all. I think it's something that has probably been kicked around as a possibility. Partly because of the familiarity, and you know, they know who he is, they know what they'd be getting. He knows the city, the team. He would be, you know, it wouldn't be a big adjustment kind of thing. Obviously, the big thing, the big difference would be there's a lot of guys who aren't here, who were here, though, you know, in his later days of being a Raptor. So,
well, virtually all of them, huh?
Yeah, exactly. You know, he would know Fred and Pascal and the OG. But in terms of the veterans that he was used to playing with, we forget a lot of times that he started for, you know, that whole stretch of 2019 before the trade for Marc Gasol. He had this great thing going with this two-man game with Kyle Lowry, and it was like he was really coming into his own, and then he got hurt. And there was this real expectation of when he comes back, this team's going to be whole again. And then, of course, they traded him with the trade deadline. So literally the day he came back, as I recall.
Yeah, he got traded, yeah.
Yeah, so I think there would be some interest. I think the question just becomes, and it's sort of the stuff that we've been talking about already, like, is he, does he fit what they need, and would they have to significantly kind of alter their playing style to accommodate him?
I think in all of this, that's the key, that you bring somebody in that you don't alter too much.
Right.
I mean, you don't want to change too much. And I'm a huge believer in chemistry, and it appears that this team, and Matt, you're much closer than we are, it appears this team has developed a new chemistry. And so if you're going to bring somebody in, you better bring somebody in that doesn't disrupt that. And so it's one of those ones where if you are doing addition, but it better be something that doesn't really change the momentum that they have going right now, don't you think?
Well, I think that as you were saying that, I think that it's why I bring up this kind of new age, right? Because your switchability on the defensive end, you're a rim, you know, you can rim protector, and you can dive and on the offensive end and get to the rim, and you maybe not have to run many plays, right? But on the dive and on the roll, you know, it can provide, you know, spacing along the perimeter, because obviously that, you know, there becomes a lot of attention. You know, Ken Burch is really good in that, you know, that mid role, you know, area, because, you know, some teams do have that rim protector. And so, you know, sometimes you bring in a player like that and you don't, to your point, John, you don't have to make any sort of adjustments. But, and then as Scott said, you know, Nick Nurse, you know, I think, you know, it's like Monty Williams said last night, he goes, we face so many different looks down the stretch defensively, right? That, you know, Nick is just really good at that. And so, and bringing out and putting players in the best situation to get the most out of them from an offensive standpoint. So if it was a player like Valanciunas, I think that because he had been here before that, you know, he'd be able to, you know, fit in. The key thing, and you mentioned this chemistry, the key thing to me that has really stood out through all of this is actually been Pascal's play. Fred, to me, is an all-star. I mean, on the air, I'm having some fun calling him Freddie All-Star. And, you know, just, you know, he's been really good. Yeah. But the ability and willingness of Pascal to share the ball.
Agreed.
You know, has really elevated this team. Because if he continues to do that, then watch out. You can add players, and he's up in that point forward type of position, right? I just think that and Barnes, as we know, he's a willing passer. But when Pascal becomes that willing passer, man, he goes to that next level, because then, you know, it allows great movement. We know what he can do with his quickness and matchups, the recognition at times of Fred and OG and Pascal of what they're doing on the court. I think we're starting to see that elevate. There were a couple of times last night with some of the younger players that you could tell, okay, hey, Pascal had a matchup in the post, and all of a sudden, you know, a shot goes up, and you could tell Pascal and Fred and OG kind of like, oh man, like we're kind of figuring this thing out, right? Let's go back to what works, right? And So to me, the key in all of that, no matter who you bring in, because Fred, hey, great off the ball. He's going to get shots. He can, you know, he's been an all-star. But Pascal doing what he's doing, distributing the ball, whew, this offense goes to another level.
All right, but I'm trying to get a straight answer out of you, and you're dodging the question. The question is Valanciunas a guy that you would go and get? Is he more valuable?
Financially, it makes sense because his number is a good number. I don't know. I'm.
What are you giving up for him, Bob?
As I look at him, right? You know, they're going to want picks. Do you want to do that? Do you feel it's the time to do a deal, right, like that? And, you know, there's a part of, you know, Masai that I think wants to see this growth here for a little bit. Is that a move that gets you in the top three of the East? Is ultimately the question that you have to ask yourself.
Do you think it does?
I don't know.
I was just going to say, guys, that I think that question is the key in terms of what is the ceiling of this team as constituted? Probably to lose in the first round to a team, you know, if they're going to be 6, 7, or 8 in the East, they're probably, you know, they'll be playing a Brooklyn or a Milwaukee or a Philadelphia in the first round. Probably not a series that they're likely to win given those teams and their rosters at this point in time. So are you going to do something that dramatically changes your roster in the hopes of maybe making that a tougher series or giving you a slightly better chance in that? It's not going to make you, you know, likely to have a long run in the East, I don't think. Again, just because of who these guys are and where they are in their development and the year they're coming off of. I think you get back into the playoffs this year and you're a tough first round out. That's a step forward from where they were. And I'm not sure that bringing in a guy like JV or somebody of his pedigree/caliber really fundamentally changes who this team is. I think they'd rather add the year and then go into next season with a similar composition and say, okay, we took a big step forward. Now we're going to take another one in 2022,
2023. That actually brings up that's a really good point, Scott, because I think what this management group wants is you don't want to be having some of these young guys back on the bench. You want them to play important games. You want them to play games in the playoffs. You want them to learn how to win at key times. Because you aren't going to win the championship this year. You're not.
Yeah, but if you bring in a Valanciunas, John, I mean, I accept your argument. But if you bring in a Valanciunas, he's going to play instead of Birch or Boucher or Achiuwa. Those are the kinds of guys he's going to replace. And we can go through the names of those three guys, and we all know they have severe limitations. Maybe Achiuwa is the only one with significant potential upside. But I don't think any of us are convinced that he's going to be a great player. He might be a good player. He has flashes of being good right now, but not all the time.
Yeah.
And he has limitations. We all know Boucher has limitations. And Birch is, you know, a good enough player, but he's not a difference maker.
Yeah. I don't want to pay a heavy price of draft picks at all, or a young guy off the roster. I don't think it's worth it.
Go ahead, Matty.
I think the thing that you always have to be careful of as a general manager or president, that sense of shortcutting where you want to get to, right? Mm-hmm. There are times to make moves and there are times to stand pat. Right. And we see it in all sports. And sometimes, you know, you look at your roster and you think you might be further ahead, you know, than you really are. Sometimes you look at it and you think that you're further behind than you actually are.
Yeah.
And I think that we could say that about the roster of the Raptors over the course of the last 3 weeks. But so much of it has to do with health. And they've had one game, as I mentioned earlier, of their top 8 players, and it's 31 games or 38 games in. let's see, the next month, what that brings. And the development of a precious Achiuwa, I think they're really intrigued by. And what is his upside? How do you view this? Are you viewing this as, where do you see him in on a team that's a championship level caliber team? Is that how you view it? Or are you viewing it as a, as Scott said, a team that can make the first round, right? I mean, so much of that has to, you know, be taken into consideration. And I think that when Masai and Bobby look at this roster, you know, I think that the next month is really going to give them a sense and a feel as to where they want to go. There are encouraging signs to me. And it's really, you know, Fred, Pascal, and OG, when they're on the court together, their willingness to share, play together, because where are your shots coming from, right? And are there times when okay, hey, I'm just going to go, well, that, you know, that's important to see that. I want to see Gary with that group as well, right? And then in the middle, as we know, it's a work in progress. Once they go down that road, when they bring a five in,
right?
We have Scotty Barnes, you know, we know the five. You want to see his minutes continue to increase. So I still think they're in this mode of, you know, let's get Barnes and Achiuwa. Let's get them as many minutes, you know, as we possibly can get them. Let's get Gary. Gary Trent Jr. is 22 years old, 22, and he's in his fourth year in the league. And so his game, you know, continues to expand. But that's just me kind of thinking about where they are right now. And maybe you decide that it's something that you'll address in the off season more so than address now. But
all right, we got more to talk about.
You don't know, because you still have this Goran Dragic piece there too, right? And he has
a big, well, he's potentially an asset in a deal.
Correct.
He's not going to play, but he's potentially an asset in the deal. We got to take a break. We're running a little over time. We'll come back and chat some more. Scott Stinson, Matt Devlin with us back after these messages. It's the Bob McCown Podcast. Yours truly, John Shannon, Matt Devlin, Scott Stinson with us. All right, so you guys have kind of poo-pooed the Valanciunas suggestion. You're not sure whether the Raptors actually need a center or don't need a center.
No, I think that they do need a center long-term. I just don't know if now is the time to do it. But again,
well, I can guarantee you sometime in the next 20 years.
The new age type of center. The idea of a, you know, think about Marc Gasol, what he, top of the post, high post.
So you want Brook Lopez. You want Brook Lopez.
No. Jared Allen is, I really like his game. You know, like that new age type of guy, I think is, you know, but anyway, they got a team
full of almost centers, and you can't decide whether you want a real center or not. And then Stinson is worried about upsetting the apple cart with what they've got going. And I'm all for that, but we're just sitting here having a conversation.
Aren't you?
So I'm getting nowhere with the center position.
Well, you still want to play, you want to play a box and one, Bob. I mean, you're playing basketball in 1968.
I'm still thinking maybe Kareem's got a game or two left in him.
Look at here. Think about the post up moves last night, like Pascal, right? It's that quickness, that burst. You know, you get down on the block and, you know, you feel the guy on your right shoulder and quickly he'll just lay it up and in. Ayton didn't have a ton of action down low when he was down there, obviously, because of his size. Raptors were tremendous on the offensive glass last night, a season best on the offensive glass. So at least they're sending, you know, players to the glass and coming away with that. But, you know, it's
but we like, don't want Ayton. Like I don't Bosch. Want Ayton.
No, but actually, that like leads Chris me Bosch, to a question.
You know,
hold on.
Spreading the court out, you know, in, you know, Miami, right?
Being, yes, we get that. But he's retired and in the Hall of Fame. And so is Kareem.
And George Mikan. George Mikan,
Bill Russell. I mean, how far down the list do you want to go, for God's sake?
Well, but let me ask you this question. Do you want the big man more on the offensive side of the ball or the defensive side of the ball? Scotty, what do you think?
Well, I think for them, the place they miss it is more on the offensive side, because they have a strong OG and Pascal are undersized, obviously, and OG in particular, but he's really strong and he can guard big men, and they're both reasonably effective against that. And as we sort of discussed, there's not that many, you know, Kareem is not walking through the door and you're not playing against him very often. So there's a couple of big men, but they've had success against the Giannis's of the world before. You know, I'm sure they wish they could call Marc Gasol at a retirement for the occasional Joel Embiid matchup, but that's not happening. So I think that gives them more flexibility on the offensive end, and that's a solution that they would maybe like to be able to find. But we sort of keep coming back to this idea of upsetting the balance, and it's not so much that for me, but it's like, I just think this management group looks at it in a bigger picture sense. And this is the same bunch of guys who last year basically said, you know what, this season stinks. We don't like it in Tampa. We've had COVID problems. We're not even going to try in the last part of the season. Kyle Lowry is going to mysteriously sit on the bench for, you know, the whole rest of the thing. And they just were quite happy to increase their draft odds, which worked out very well for them, because they ended up getting a jump over what they're expected. They ended up getting Scotty Barnes. And I think they're more likely to look at it and go, okay, do we want to really mix up this roster we have with a bunch of young promising pieces in the hopes that maybe we get a little bit better in a first round matchup? Or are we better suited to just experiment as much as we can with these players we have, play with them down the stretch, get them into a playoff series, and then in the summer figure out what is available, what the opportunities are, and build from there? I just don't see them as likely to go, let's upset everything and make a big transaction just to be slightly better in a matchup sense in the first round.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. And I'd add that when you think about Masai and Bobby, I think they always try to put themselves in a situation where you're one move away, one big move away, right? Mm-hmm. From being that title contender. And, you know, that mindset, I think, is, you know, they're just not an organization that's happy to go to the playoffs, right? If they're in the playoffs, they want to be, you know, a contender, right? They want to be, you know, at that level. So I don't know if those moves are available out there as of yet. And then to Scott's point, the development of the young players is also, you know, extremely pivotal as well for them.
All right. So as I've been trying to say for the last 20 minutes or so, you keep poo-pooing the center thing. You can't even agree that you want one or they need one, much less who it would be, either living or dead.
No. I think that eventually it becomes, you know, who do you think can guard in space, being put in that pick and roll situation?
I'm not interested in analysis, Devlin. I'm interested in names. Give me names, and you can't come up with one. So let's forget that whole nonsense.
I came up with ones, but you
said Jared Allen.
Not gonna happen.
But you bring in the notion of another point guard. Clearly, the Raptors only have one that they have any trust in. Mm-hmm. They're not going to play anybody else off the bench. They're going to play their 6'8" guys and have one of those guys bring the ball up the floor. I know that Pascal can bring the ball up the floor, but I don't like him bringing the ball up the floor. I don't like him being in control at the top of the key. I want him to get the ball in the hands of Freddie as fast as he possibly can. And the reason why they don't want Freddie to bring the ball up the floor is completely lost on me. But okay, it seems to be working all right now.
That allows him to play 37, 38 minutes a night, because he's not going to face any ball pressure. And it also, because he's also one of the best 3-point shooters, will get him into that. And then when you have Pascal coming downhill at his size and quickness and speed, it's a pretty good thing, and it's hard to guard.
Yeah, but that's a pile of poppycock, because the truth of the matter is that Freddie is not a catch and shoot kind of guy. I mean, not that he can't do it. It's just that their offense doesn't allow it to happen. Pascal comes down, yo-yos at the top of the key for a little while till he gets in trouble. Freddie is running around like a chicken with his head cut off and then cutting through a screen to try and get the ball back from Pascal. And now there's 8 seconds left on the clock. And now he's got 8 seconds to do what he should have 14 or 16 seconds to do. Scott, there's the end of my analysis.
Maddie, by the way, Bob wants Gail Goodrich and Jerry West. Okay. That's all he wants. He's not asking for much. He just wants Jerry West and Gail Goodrich in the backcourt. That's all.
Let's pound the ball, get it across the timeline in 7 seconds. Let's run through five options and end with about
play four.
Okay.
Remember when we're speaking of the Phoenix Suns, remember when they used to take pride in taking shots within 7 seconds?
Yeah. 7 seconds or less.
Yeah. Seven or less. And they did it as often as not. Anyway,
Paul Westhead or Doug Moe when they were coaching. I mean, remember the Denver Nuggets were like that too, weren't they? They were crazy.
Well, Denver scored 140 every night.
Yeah.
Uphill and into the wind. All right. So again, for about the 15th time, if somebody would let me finish my thought, not that I know that I have one. So it's not a center, but it is a point guard. You could use help at the point. Are you prepared to make a deal for a point guard? Understanding that Fred is essentially the point guard, you could turn him back into the two. Couldn't you?
Well, I don't know why you'd do that now. Why would you do that now, Bob?
I don't think you would now.
Well,
yeah. I'd like.
So you want to go get a two?
I mean,
you don't want to get anything. You don't want to do anything. You want to stay at home and be safe.
No, that's not. I actually am intrigued by Scotty and Pascal at their sizes, the ability to see over defenses and to distribute, and so maybe it's a wing, right? That has some of that, and maybe a little bit bigger that can knock down a three. I don't know. I'm not quick to say, oh, you need a point guard. In today's day and age, it is positionless basketball, right?
Right.
It is.
I'll acknowledge that.
And so Raptors get the ball up the court, as we know, in a blink of an eye. They try to get into their early offense. So how much of a traditional point guard type of player do you need? And even when you have one, you know, they got to be able to do other things. And that's what makes Fred so good right now, is that he is just a tremendous, you know, 3-point shooter.
To that point, and Scotty, maybe to you first, how surprised were you that he was only 10th in the balloting for the All-Star game?
Not surprised, only because that's, I think, a reflection of the market. You know, Toronto is just not the place that is top of mind for a lot of NBA All-Star voters, and such is life. I mean, at this point, to Matt's point, he's an All-Star. It would be a shock if he wasn't. I think he'll get all NBA consideration if he keeps this up through the remainder of the season. I mean, he is at that level where you could see him being getting some third team all NBA votes for sure. So just to answer that question that Bob raises about, you know, is it a point guard you need? I don't really think it is a point guard, because to all we've been talking about, the ball handling that Pascal and Scotty Barnes have been doing, I do think the one thing, if there's a player out there that they would be looking for, would be like a scoring wing who can create a bit of his own offense and maybe help in their half-court offense problems, because that's the one thing that, especially in a playoff series, if it's slowed down and they're playing a lot of half-court basketball, that's the one area that they just aren't great at. And part of that is because they're not loaded with shooters. And
right.
Pascal, as much as he's played well recently, is not an outside threat at this point. If they have some guy who's able to provide a bit more offensive spark and be a scoring wing, then that's probably an area that they would look to strengthen. Again, and I'll say it for the millionth time, if it's not at a steep price and doesn't require them to kind of give away key pieces of who are still early on their development curve.
So you're talking about a piece that is going to play 12 to 14 minutes a night.
Yeah.
I'm looking for somebody who can play 30 minutes a night in the middle. That's and I think that's a more significant ask, because they certainly, they're good enough the way they are. I mean, I acknowledge what you guys are saying, because it's right. And I'm not negative on this 6'8", 6'9", everybody, except Fred. But at some point, if this team keeps winning 6-7, 5-7, they're going to be in the playoffs. And Matty D, I think you said it earlier. Are they going to be satisfied with being a first-round knockout? I think we know Masai well enough. He's not going to be satisfied with that. This team keeps playing the way they've been playing. He's going to be looking and saying, you know what? We can beat Chicago. We can beat Brooklyn. We can beat Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. We just need this piece. And what we're debating here is, what's that piece?
Right.
But it's going to be a piece that plays minutes.
I think that the next, as I mentioned earlier, and I don't know if Scott would agree with this, I think the next month really determines that as far as the health and how the top eight play. Because again, we can go around in circles on it, but we haven't seen that except for one game.
Right.
And so you have to see that at some point, you know that. I mean, that's across any sport, right? You have to be able to see, because then you are in a position of strength in order to do a deal. Right. And yep. As we know, that's, you know, certainly what Masai and Bobby like to be in.
Well, look, we're sitting here debating change, and it's and we can do it with kind of a smile on our face, because the truth of the matter is, these are not desperate times for the Toronto Raptors. I think we all are of the same mind that if they don't do anything at the trade deadline or before, it's not the end of the world. That there are lots of pieces here that are interesting. This team has played very, very well when they have been healthy, and that's been very few games. And that includes last night. I think we all concur. It was a loss, but it wasn't an embarrassment by any stretch. And the only thing they proved to me is they might be as good as Phoenix on a given night. So no downside from that perspective. While you guys contemplate your navels and the other realities of life, like getting Valanciunas back, we'll let you rest and relax.
For the record, guys, Bob would not take Elgin Baylor. The wrong size. He's the wrong size. He's in that tweener. He's a tweener. You know, he's not the point guard. He's 6'8". He doesn't want Elgin Baylor.
You know what? I can be 6'8" in high heels.
I gotta go back and listen tonight, because I know you guys spent time on what the Edmonton Oilers should do and everything. So I'm being serious. I'm intrigued by that.
I'm sure you are.
You just keep being intrigued. Matt Devlin, Scott Stinson. Thank you, boys. Always fun.
Thanks, guys.
Anytime, you know that.
We love you. See you later.
All right,
we'll come back after these messages. Our thanks to Matt Devlin, Scott Stinson for joining us, and they may never be back.
I'm just trying to
people who don't agree with me don't get re-asked.
I'm figuring how to get Oscar Robertson on your team too, so it'll be good. You'd have a hell of a team, you know. Hell of a team.
Oh, well, yeah. See, the only thing the Raptors are missing is another 6'9" point guard. There was one of those in the NBA. In fact, the first one in the NBA was a guy by the name of Irvin Magic Johnson.
Magic Johnson, sure.
Who probably,
but he was more than a point. He could do it. He could. I mean, I still remember the night against Philadelphia. He played all five positions, right? So
I mean, I can remember this entire playoff series when Kareem got hurt. He played center.
Yeah, well, that's one of the five positions.
He played the whole series at center, but he played game.
Well, that was against the Sixers.
He was pretty good. He didn't even come up in the conversation.
No, we went pretty deep when we got to Elgin Baylor. So,
yeah, I believe that was one you mentioned.
Sure.
Evander Kane, it appears, is going to sign with the Edmonton Oilers. Is that what you hear?
Well, it's not done yet, but there's no question that the Oilers have interest on a very, very short-term deal, which, you know, 4 months. They need to find a way to get some more goal scoring cheaply. And right now, Kane would be cheap. But I think that there are going to be other teams kicking tires. So that becomes the question. He's going to have his choice, Bob, of where he wants to play.
If you were the Edmonton Oilers, and I know you're close to the organization.
Would this be your choice? No, it wouldn't. I just don't think it fits in with what they're trying to build in Edmonton. But, Kenny Holland wants to win and wants to win quickly. And they need to, you know, let me just say, they're 2-9-2 in their last 13. And they need to
do something. Falling off the map.
They need to do something. And I think this is an acknowledgement that they need to do something. And they're in cap hell still. And they don't have very many other ways to do it other than finding a cheap remedy. And this guy has talent, but is he going to be a distraction? That's the question.
Well,
so my answer is no. My answer is no.
Well, my answer is no too, but my answer would be no to every team. I just think it's an incredibly dangerous thing to do. Mm-hmm. You know, if he comes back with Edmonton and over a period of time, and I don't mean a few months, is a good boy, behaves, and becomes reasonably well-liked and respected within the room, then okay. You know, we'll all say, all right, you get another chance. But right now, I'm not touching him with a 10-foot pole.
Well, and I think that they're just saying, listen, we're going to sign him for the remainder of the season, if we can, and go from there. And it's basically a four-month tryout, Bob, just a pure and simple four-month tryout.
And Edmonton would be on the hook for what? Minimum salary, probably?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah. Probably. All right. We'll come back. I think hockey's on the agenda tomorrow, is it not?
No, it's Scott Moore. Scott Moore, we're going to talk about, we're not talking about, you know, the movement in sports, movement from pro, and how we how we need to change our thinking process about sports.
I suspect that will be an interesting conversation. We hope you you all will join us for us, with us, to us, by us. We thank you for participating today, and we'll see you tomorrow. Goodbye, everybody.